Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, March 25th, 2026, on 91.7 FM WHUS Storrs. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. My co-host Ron Meniza is still preparing his show. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch ND for 30 days, and also my YouTube channel at Radio Naturopath. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Here's more post-surgical stuff. Stuff has happened. It's kind of interesting. I had my second lumbar MRI with and without contrast. I'm fortunate that the gadolinium contrast did nothing to me. Two lovely young women tended to me. I went to Radiology Associates of Hartford. They put me on a bolster for under my knees, and I had pillows to lay on, so it was very, very comfortable. I was offered a blanket, which I decided I didn't need. It might have been nice to have the blanket over my feet. They got kind of cold. And I asked them to cover my eyes, and because they thought I was claustrophobic. And I said, no, I'm not really claustrophobic. It's just the eye cover is very relaxing. I found that having an eye cover with me all the time is a nice thing, and that I find it relaxing because I find that I have to wait. When I have to wait at a doctor's office, because I've been going to a lot of appointments, it's a great time to sit and relax. And if I cover my eyes, it's very calming. And when I do Shavasana, when I'm doing meditations, any lying meditations, I like to cover my eyes. If I have my eyes covered, it's just a technique for calming. Not that I'm particularly anxious in the MRI. I'm not really. The thing I was most anxious about was what the gadolinium was going to do to me. I just relaxed like I was in Shavasana, and it was no problem. I had to hear the Industrial Symphony, all the noise that you hear during the MRI, but I also listened to the Grateful Dead, so I recommend any music that you find relaxing. They had Spotify, so I could have listened to anything. If you're having an MRI, usually, I'm not sure if you can have music if you're having an MRI of your head. I wasn't able to at Wyndham Hospital a few years ago when I had that done, but every time I've had an MRI of my lower body, of my lumbar spine, I've always been able to have music. You know, I had one in 2011, that long ago they were doing music and they had a radio station. And the last two times I went, they had one had Pandora, UConn had Pandora, and Radiology Associates of Hartford had Spotify. So they said, listen to anything you want, we'll play it for you. And that was great. And I recommend, if you're going to have an MRI, ask for any music that you find relaxing. If you want to have music that you find energizing, that's kind of good, but you might be more inclined to be energized and maybe move around, and you don't want to move around. So relaxing is good, whatever that is for you. One of the women, Stephanie, she was a pro at placing the IV. I didn't even notice it was happening. And when she gave me the gadolinium, I had no reaction. I said, I'm concerned about what's going to happen. She said, you're not going to feel anything. And most of the time, it's true. I think that at the highest level, 2.4% of people feel a reaction to gadolinium. And I was in the 97 and change percent that has nothing happen. I did have to go to the bathroom. I had to use the bathroom a lot the next day. So I don't know if that was my kidney saying, let's get this out of me. So I got the results of the MRI a couple of hours later. I was in Glastonbury, so I went and played around. I went to Dee's One Smart Cookie. I went to Trader Joe's, which is across the street from where you get the MRI. And then I went to see Stephen, Deb, and Gage, the dog, at Bicycles East. And Ron was there with our friend Karen, who was looking for a bike and interested in a fitting. So I got to see them, and I gave Gage salmon skin treats from Trader Joe's. And Deb explained to me that golden doodles will sometimes decide that they're not going to eat, and that they just, for no reason, they just are like, I'm not eating, I'm just not interested in food. It's almost like a cat thing. And she said that someone told her to get Trader Joe's salmon skins to get him back interested in eating. Well, she allowed me to offer him the salmon skins, and he thought they were just great. And she said, "This is so great. I'm going to take them home. I'll put them on his food, and he'll be likely to eat his food again." I should check with her to find out if it worked. So then after that, when I was driving home, about maybe 2 hours after I had the procedure, I got a text that the results were ready. So I had to pull over. I pulled over in Hebron, and I was going to go to Flower Girl, but I decided not to go to Flower Girl, that I have enough sourdough in the house. And so I had to sit there and fuss and ponder the results. So here's what it said. The L2, L3 stenosis is still there. It's now mild to moderate versus severe. The stenosis between L3 and L4 is gone, which is wonderful. There is still some foraminal narrowing at those levels. But the really concerning thing is that I developed epidural fibrosis along the fecal sac at L4. So that's the sac that covers my spinal column. And there's also epidural fibrosis surrounding the L4 nerve root. So that means my body made scar tissue, which is something that happens to a certain percentage of people who get laminectomy surgery. So I'm one of the unlucky ones. And that is probably what is continuing to cause my pain. Because the pain isn't anywhere new. It's in the same places. But it's not extreme. It's moderate when it gets worse. And it's worse from activity. So if I ride my bike for a while, it gets more sore. If I walk for a while, it gets more sore. And I'm sitting here talking to you. There's no significant pain. If I sit for a long time, my lower back gets sore, but not nerve pain. And my butt does not get sore anymore. I don't have nerve pain in my butt. The nerve pain starts at the top of, just below the top, below my inguinal crease. So it starts on the side of my leg, and it goes down to my knee, and sometimes it goes into my leg as well. So it's all lower than it was, which makes me think it's what's primarily involved is the nerve arising from L3, L4. So there's scar tissue surrounding that L4 nerve root. That's probably what's continuing to cause my pain. I have not been to the neurosurgeon yet to talk it over. That's happening in a couple of days. So when that happens, I will report back on what happened there. So I will have to discuss options with the neurosurgeon when I see them. It makes me a poor candidate for further non-invasive surgery. My understanding is it doesn't rule out having a fusion in the future, but I don't think I need a fusion at this point. What I need to do is address the epidural fibrosis. And so to address epidural fibrosis, you don't address it with major surgery. You address it with non-invasive procedures. And one of the MD procedures is adhesiolysis. So that's an injection procedure where they inject a bunch of steroids like methylprednisolone and some other steroid as well, so a depot of it so that it stays in the spine for a while. And they also inject hyaluronidase, which is a compound that breaks down collagen. So there are studies that show it can really help improve pain. And you might have to have it a couple of times. There are definitely places not too far. I think the nearest place that does it is in Avon. So I have to find out if I'm a candidate for it and how much it costs and whether insurance pays for it. And we'll see what they say about that. There's also an ultrasound procedure where they go in and clean up scar tissue. So I have to find out what Tamika and Dr. Lantner recommends for this. So I have to find out if this is something I'm able to do. Now, I went to the naturopathic conference over the last weekend, and I asked everyone, numerous people, what can help with epidural fibrosis. So one of the lecturers was Mark Romero, who said that scar tissue can be caused by unresolved grief. So I can, if I deal with unresolved grief, I might be able to help the fibrosis. So that's an interesting take. Certainly cranial sacral therapy can be helpful in acupuncture. In terms of cranial sacral, when I go to Crossroads, they do their integrative manipulative therapy, and that includes some energetic medicine as well. And so, but specifically physical therapy, there are physical therapy methods for loosening up the tissue and helping to break up the fibrosis. So when I see them at Crossroads again, and unfortunately I had an opportunity to go, they called me and they had a last minute cancellation and I couldn't go today because I had to do this and I had to drive Ron somewhere. So that was unfortunate. So maybe I'll get in this week anyway, we'll see. But I do have a chiropractic appointment today, so that's great. And so I have to find out, are there exercises, specific exercises that can help break up this fibrosis? And can they do body work on me that's going to help? I also saw a gentleman at the naturopathic conference who practices with one of my colleagues. He's a colleague as well. And he does some nice craniosacral and polyvagal body work and some other interesting things. And he said he would work with me if I liked. And then in terms of things to take, I looked up, I don't know if these will help, but these are the things that have been most studied and best indicated for this condition. One of them is serrapeptase. Serrapeptase it's a vegan enzyme that can help to break down proteins that you don't want in your body. So I got some of that and I've started taking it. And then transresveratrol. So you've probably heard me talk about resveratrol before. Resveratrol is a terrific antioxidant. It's in grape skins and it's in peanuts and it's in Japanese knotweed. And it's something that you can that you can take, and it's a nitric oxide enhancer, and it's an antioxidant, helps break things down. And so there's been studies on transresveratrol in mouse models of fibrosis. I don't know if they were topical applications or they gave them to the mice to take. And it's maybe more preventative than treating, but I'm going to take it anyway. Transresveratrol is wonderful for all kinds of antioxidant support, so I'm waiting for that to arrive. Then Florence and the Machine, dog days are over. Anyway, I saw Florence McPherson, who practices in Milford, shout out, holla, and she was lovely, and she did a great talk on cell salts, and I hadn't been using cell salts as extensively as she does, and so I'm listening to her talk and all the things that she uses cell salts for, and it was very interesting. I've been mostly using cell salts for discharges. I've been using it for sinus infections. Like Ron thinks he has we're not sure if he has a sinus infection or an abscess right now in his tooth. So anyway, we think it's a sinus infection because his nose is starting to run and he feels better. So because the color of his, I keep asking him, what's the color of the discharge? Discharge is clear. So I said, okay, you're going to get Natrum Muriaticum cell salt. That was the one that was indicated. So I've been using cell salts and basing the color and consistency of the discharges on what I prescribe for the particular cell salt. Well, cell salts can be used for anything. There's only 12 of them, and Schüssler, who created the cell salts, was said that there's tissue salt imbalances at microscopic levels, and Florence talked about how it's nanomedicine. And it's nanotechnology, and that when you take these tiny amounts of these cell salts, they can bring the cell salts into balance. So in terms of healing tissues, calc floor and silica can be helpful. And so I thought maybe I would try those. For nervous exhaustion, for nerve pain, and it's also great for nervous exhaustion, is Cali-Fos. And I forgot that when we were in school, before we would have a test, we'd be anxious about taking the test. And everybody took Cali-Fos. And it was interesting. It's calcium phosphoricum, which is potassium phosphate. And then because I've been getting a lot of tooth decay, I thought about calcarea phosphorica. So I went to Florence and I said, and she also said that when she was going through menopause, she felt really exhausted. She had a lot of things going on in her body. So she decided she was going to take bioplasma. What bioplasma is, it's all of the cell salts. And she said she prefers that, Schüssler said the most useful potency of cell salt is 6X. And so when you take these cell salts, you don't dilute them, you triturate them, which means that you take a quantity of the cell salt and you use a mortar and pestle and you mix it together with lactose pellets so that the pellets are mixed with the actual powder of the cell salts. And that's how cell salts are made. and they're in lower potencies than when you use a homeopathic remedy. You're usually using C potency, frequently using C potencies, hundreds of dilutions, or M's with thousands of dilutions. With our LMs are the attenuated potencies. So with cell salts, you're using X potencies. They're diluted by factors of 10. So 6X is a series of dilutions and succussion, or triturations, I should say, 10 times, or 6 times. And so that's the most useful one. So she said use bioplasma. Bioplasma you can get, and it's all of the cell salts in one. And so she used that when she was perimenopausal and very exhausted and had things going on. And I told her what was going on with me. She said, take the bioplasma. And she said, get one that has only 6X in it. If you get the major brand that you see in stores or online, it has 6X and 3X in it. Get that, but there is one you can get that has only 6X. And it's really easy to take. She said, it'll tell you to take it 3 times a day. You don't necessarily need to do that. If you're doing supportive treatment, you can take it, you know, a couple of pellets once a day and that's it. So it already arrived. It was so great. I got the brand that has only the 6X in it, and I've already taken a couple pellets, and I'll take more today. And I'm just going to check in with myself every day to see if I need that. Those are some interesting things that I'm going to do. And I'm just hoping that I can get through this without more surgery, but I don't think that's going to be the case. I think that when I go see Tamika, if we're going to treat the epidural fibrosis, you don't treat it by having more surgery. And I'm not a good candidate for a non-invasive surgery, which is kind of disturbing because I made scar tissue. But we're going to try to go after the scar tissue, and hopefully I can, there's a procedure like that they'll say that adhesiolysis works for me and it'll be covered by insurance, but I don't know. So we'll see. So in terms of Ron has a sinus infection. We're not sure if it's a sinus infection or a tooth abscess. So he called into the dentist, and the dentist said, and then he has a PCP appointment tomorrow. So he's going to go see his doctor tomorrow and start there because he feels like he's getting better and his nose is starting to run. So we're thinking maybe it is sinus and not tooth after all, which is great because it's much more serious if it's a tooth abscess, because he would need a root canal for that or something. But meanwhile, so I put him on Natrum Muriaticum cell salt. So there you go. All right, so here's some, I learned a lot of things at the conference. So I'm going to talk to you about some of the things that I learned. One of them, but before I tell you about that, I want to tell you about a funny thing that happened. I baked sunflower butter cookies, and they were the very simple recipe. So I recommend these recipes to you. You use nut butter of choice. Could be peanut butter, sunflower butter, could be tahini, could be almond butter. And to that, and I have proportions, but it's basically a nut butter, oats, a little baking soda, not powder, but soda, and a sweetener, sugar. And you can use whatever kind of sugar you want. You could use coconut sugar, which can make it a little less sweet, or you can use, I use demerara sugar, which is got a little more molasses and a little more nutrition in it. And did I put anything? Oh, some vanilla. I use sunflower butter. And of course it was chocolate chips, so I put in organic bittersweet chocolate chips. And you just mix it together and you bake it for 10 minutes. You make little balls and you flatten them just a little bit and you stick them in the oven. 10 minutes is all you need. Well, it's going to depend on your oven. But my oven, 10 minutes, they come out mushy and then they dry. But then they're just right. They're soft and delicious and not burned. And don't worry about the fact that they're still pretty mushy when they come out because they harden up and dry out. But they don't harden up too much. They still taste soft. They're great. So then I broke open one of the cookies to eat it, and it was bright green inside. I said, oh no, it's gone moldy. I made all these cookies and they're moldy. This is terrible. I tasted the cookie anyway, and it tasted delicious, like a sunflower butter chocolate chip cookie with oats in it. It was wonderful. And it was bright green. And it didn't smell moldy. So what happened? So I had to go online and find out if this is a thing. Because what's interesting is the whole thing doesn't turn green, but when you open them up, they're green inside. So sunflower seed butter, also known as sun butter, is a great alternative to peanut butter, especially if you have a nut allergy. It's delicious and nutritious, and you can swap it one-to-one in recipes. And if you bake with sunflower butter, your cookies might turn green. It's perfectly normal and harmless with simple explanations and solutions. If you don't want it to be green, it's okay. And if you don't care, it's fine. You can eat them green like that. It's really fine. So this is what happens. So the green color in sun butter cookies is because there's a chemical reaction between two key ingredients. So sunflower seeds have chlorogenic acid in them. It's a naturally occurring compound that's in part of chlorophyll. It's present in sunflower seeds and acts as a green pigment. And baking soda, the leavening agent, sodium bicarbonate, is basic. It has a high pH, and so it's weak, but it's a weak base because it's only 7. A strong base is going to be closer in the double digits, close to 14. The pH scale goes from 0 to 14. So when you put baking soda and chlorogenic acid together, the alkaline baking soda with the acidic chlorogenic acid, it produces a green pigment called chlorophyllin. And the reaction intensifies as the cookies cool down, and you get this characteristic green hue. Because it's not an ugly, moldy green. It's a beautiful emerald green. It's actually very lovely, if it doesn't bother you. So that's what happens. It's the chlorogenic acid in the sunflower seeds plus baking soda. Put them together and you get chlorophyllin. And chlorophyllin is this beautiful dark green color. So your sunflower butter cookies are going to be green on the inside. There's nothing wrong with it. If it bothers you that they're green, you can do something about it. If it doesn't bother you, just eat them. There's nothing wrong with them. They're not bad. They're not moldy. The chlorophyllin has this beautiful green color. Anything that's beautiful and green like that is going to have antioxidant properties for you. It's going to be detoxifying because it's got chlorophyll in it. So don't worry about it. It's perfectly fine. However, if you just don't want your sun butter cookies to be green, you can use a little bit less baking soda and do a 10% reduction, see how they turn out. See, I wouldn't do that because then the cookies wouldn't rise as much. They're going to be harder and crunchier. I don't want that. You can add an acid. You can add an acidic ingredient like lemon juice, apple cider vinegar, or even vegan buttermilk if you want to keep them vegan. It can neutralize the baking soda and prevent the green color. Start with half a teaspoon and adjust based on your recipe and desired taste because they're going to taste a little lemony. If you substitute baking soda, that's interesting. I didn't use baking powder. This article assumes that you're using baking powder. I did not use, I'm sorry. Substitute the baking soda. You're replacing half the baking soda with baking powder. It can help reduce the green color while maintaining the leavening power. I don't want to do that. And the other thing is I'm thinking about making these cookies on Passover, and I avoid kitniyot on Passover, which is a lot of the seeds that you, so I wouldn't put the cookies are kosher for Passover as long as you don't use the oats. Because baking soda you can use, and the cookies don't bake for long. You're supposed to not have anything that bakes longer than 18 minutes, and they only bake for 10. And so I can use baking soda. And I wouldn't make them with sunflower butter, though. I would make them with almond butter. And I could do almond butter, hazelnut butter, not peanut butter, but hazelnut butter, almond butter, macadamia butter. That would be very decadent. So anything that's any nut butter that's not a seed, but I would probably just use almond butter. Almond butter is not cheap, but it's the easiest to get. It's of the other nut butters, it's the easiest to find and the cheapest. So I think I'm going to make almond butter cookies without the oats. I might put in quinoa because quinoa, depending on who you ask, is not kidney oat. Because it's a kind of seed quinoa wasn't around when the rabbis decided what was kidney oat. So you can use quinoa. So if you avoid overmixing the batter, because that can activate the chlorophyllin process. When the baking soda is good and mixed with the sunflower butter, it's more likely to happen. And you can also use natural sun butter So you make sure you're using an unsweetened variety, as processed bran might could have additives that influence the color. I think the one that I was using a very good bran that's organic, that had nothing but sunflower seeds in it. It still happened. Bright green, seriously bright green. My advice is deal with the green. If you really can't deal with the green color, you can use some of the advice to make them not green. But I just say deal with the green color because the recipe works out very nicely. The cookies are wonderful. So I would just say deal with the fact that they're green and consider making them for St. Patrick's Day because you'll have green cookies and they'll be delicious. And you don't have to put food coloring in. They turn green on their own. It's great. So that's what happened. All right, so here's some highlights from the Naturopathic Conference. So Lindsay Mayer, ND, talked about circadian cycles and hormones. And here's some pearls that I got from her. Cortisol and insulin are active in the light during the day, and melatonin and hormone-sensitive lipase are active in the dark. So if you eat more of your calories and carbohydrates early in the day when you have cortisol to promote energy to burn them and the insulin to process them. So if you eat carbs later in the day, your cortisol and your insulin are on a downward slide. You don't have as much insulin around to help get the carbs into the cells for processing. So what's going to happen is you're going to have more sugar lying around, and what insulin you have is going to favor storage. So there was a doctor a while back who I used to promote people listening to, and she would say no carbs after 3 p.m. So that may be good advice. Obviously, if you're looking for fat loss and looking to be at an optimal weight, you should do whatever works for you. The diet that works for you is the one that works best. But if you're struggling and you have your perimenopausal or postmenopausal and you're getting that meno belly, these are some things to try so you take advantage of the cortisol and insulin you have early in the day. And if you're going to eat carbs, eat unrefined carbs and eat them earlier in the day and try stopping your carbs for the rest of the day. That's stopping carbs at 3 p.m. So I would say have more of your carbs at breakfast time, somewhat less at lunch, and then stop in the afternoon. In the afternoon, the rest of the day, eat lower carb. So that's something you can try and it might be helpful for you. And then you have hormone-sensitive lipase and melatonin that help to relax you. The hormone-sensitive lipase helps you to burn the fat, burn fat that you had during the day. We don't have as much hormone-sensitive lipase as we get older because we don't have the hormones to push the hormone-sensitive lipase. So you want to take advantage of that calorie burning process that you have earlier in the day. So having sweet desserts at night is not a great idea. If you want to have sweets, have them early in the day. Have a afternoon snack if you want to have a piece of chocolate or something. If you're really trying to lose weight, you may not want to have a high calorie dessert at night. You don't want to have sweets. If you must have something sweet, then make sure it's as low glycemic as possible, that it gets in slowly. So having a fruit crumble would be a better choice than having chocolate at night, because the fruit crumble at least has a bunch of fiber in it to help slow things down. So that would be something to think about, that if you're going to have dessert at night, have fruit and whole grain and maybe with some chia seeds in it, or chia pudding would be another good thing to have. And because that way it's going to slow down the absorption of the carbohydrates. You're going to get fiber, which slows down absorption, and make sure there's some fat in there. So for example, if you're making a crumble, use coconut. If you're doing it vegan, do coconut oil. And if you're not, then you can use butter, and that'll slow the absorption. So, dessert at night is not the best idea if you're trying to lose weight. And if you must have some, make it small and make sure it's high in fiber and fat and maybe some protein. So the other thing is it's a good idea to go to bed around 9 to 10 at night to hit that sweet spot of cortisol and high melatonin, low cortisol and high melatonin, which you've had me you've heard me talk about this before. If you wait until 11 or midnight or later, you miss that sweet spot and you won't sleep as well. And you'll be more rested if you sleep 7 hours from 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. than if you sleep 8 hours from midnight to 8. And if you're a shift worker, shift workers are always at a disadvantage. They can do the same exact diet as somebody who is not a shift worker, who's active during the day and sleeps at night. And they will tend to have more cardiovascular problems, more health problems, lower energy. And it's really hard to adjust. Our bodies were just not meant to be active at night. We were really meant to be, we're diurnal creatures. And so shift workers really have a hard time. So remember what they say in Newfoundland, and they say all over the places, every hour before midnight counts as two. So, and there's good reason for that. And the reason is that your cortisol and melatonin are high. Cortisol is high in the morning and melatonin is low, and they cross each other. The other thing that rises during the day is adenosine. Adenosine makes you sleepy as well. So your adenosine and melatonin are lowest in the morning, so it makes it hard for you to sleep, and they are turned off by light. I know that it's really hard for me to stay asleep when during the summer, when the sun rises in the 5 o'clock hour. It's really hard for me to stay asleep. And if you need to stay asleep for longer, then you have to do things like cover your eyes, have blackout curtains, stuff like that. What I do, so the best thing to do in the summer really is to go to bed as early as you can manage. And for me, that's going to be in the 9 o'clock hour. And then that way I'm sure to get at least, I'm going to get my 8 hours in. And I need at least 8 hours. I need 8 or 9 hours. Given that I wake up in the night to go to the bathroom, it's hard to, it's hard to get that straight through sleep. So stress raises cortisol at times a day when you don't want it. You can lower cortisol with deep breathing, meditation, doing yoga nidra, which is yoga nidra, you've heard me talk about before, is a progressive relaxation of all the parts of your body, yin and restorative yoga, any relaxing yoga, tai chi, leisure walks in nature, all kinds of things that can help you lower your cortisol during the day. Also, remember that excessive calorie restriction increases cortisol, especially in postmenopausal women. And when you have that increase in cortisol, you don't have the estrogen and progesterone to back it up and ameliorate that effect. You do want to get light exposure first thing in the morning. That'll help wake you up. If you're using tech, here I am with all my tech here, right? But I do have blue blocking. I'm wearing reading glasses. These are not my progressives. My progressives have blue blocking and they have UV blocking. And I only buy reading glasses that have blue blocking on them also. So I prefer, when I'm using tech exclusively, when I'm with a patient, I will wear my progressives because I have to be able to look close up and I have to see them from far away. And when I'm examining them, I need to have my progressives on because I need to look at a variety of distances. So, but when I'm just using tech, like I'm talking to you now, I don't have to look far away. So I prefer to use just the reading glasses because, you know, when you have progressive glasses, the top of the glasses, the bottom of the glasses are your reading and your top is for distance, and you have to move your head around to get to the sweet spot, and it's bothersome to the neck. So I can look at my tech. All of my tech is close enough that I can see it. And there's blue blocking on here. So I have blue blocking on the tech. I have some, I do the settings on my tech so that there's some mitigation of the light that comes out. So you can adjust your tech so that it's not so bright. And I do that. And I have my monitor at the office like that. My laptop is like that. And my, my tablets are, and my phone are all like that. So that blue light is very stimulating and it increases your cortisol. So you want to make sure that you have good sleep hygiene, that the bedroom is a place only for relaxing activities. You shouldn't be doing work and intense things. You know, there's this whole thing about bed rotting where you spend a lot of your time in bed because it's nice and cozy and stuff. But really, the bedroom should be a place for intimacy and relaxation and not getting stuff done. And really, you shouldn't be watching TV in the bedroom. Ron and I use tech and watch TV in the bedroom. We really shouldn't do that. But we really like to be relaxed at night, and that's relaxing for us. Carbohydrates for males, it's been studied that if you do intermittent fasting, if you recommend intermittent fasting, men, it works well for long term. For women, I don't tend to recommend intermittent fasting, although if a woman comes in and says, I'm doing intermittent fasting and it's working great, I say go for it. But what Lindsay said is really, if you want to get a woman started on fat loss and changing their diet and getting used to eating differently, you can do intermittent fasting short term. Intermittent fasting, if you're still menstruating, can affect your cycle. So it's not a wonderful thing to go long term because your body perceives it as a stress. Also, it's a good idea if you're going to, when you wake up, you should eat something. Now, people, I know that I have an issue that I'm not ready to eat a meal when I first wake up. So as soon as you get hungry, it's a good idea to eat. When you eat food, whenever you eat food, it raises your cortisol. So that's why it's a good idea to stop eating a few hours before you want to go to sleep. Because if you eat something before you go to bed, and especially carbohydrates, if you eat snacky things and dessert in bed, that's not a good time to eat it because it raises your cortisol and you won't sleep as well. And people report that they eat sugary things at bedtime, you don't sleep as well. She also talked about how it's better to eat more earlier and eat less as the day goes on. That old adage of eat breakfast like a king or queen, eat lunch like a prince or princess, and eat dinner like a pauper. So there have been studies where that showed that people who ate 700 calorie breakfasts and ate less during the day versus 700 calorie dinners and less in the morning, the ones that lost the weight were the ones who ate the big breakfast. So you eat when you have the cortisol and you take that food and you have energy to burn the food off. And that sets you up well. So depending, if you don't want to count calories, then the thing to do is to eat, just remember to eat more food during the day and have a low carb dinner. So your dinner should be mostly non-starchy vegetables and protein. If you're a vegan, then I would do non-starchy vegetables and whatever your protein source is. So if you do beans, you do nuts and seeds, if you do a soy product like tempeh or tofu, that's what to eat for dinner. And try not to have major carbohydrates. If you're going to have a little rice, have just that. Have just a little bit of a few bites of rice. Don't make it the star of the show. The star of the show should really be the non-starchy vegetables and the protein. And that you can eat almost as much as you want of. And just have a little bit of carb if you must. And consider eating the carb at the end of the meal when you're already, if you've already got protein and fiber on board, it's going to slow the absorption of the carbohydrate. I know I like to have a little piece of sourdough when I have soup. So I make sure I put a little bit of butter on that piece of good quality sourdough. And then I'm usually having a soup and salad. So I'm eating a lot of fiber and some protein with that meal. So that probably works. But having a big meal of pasta at night, unless you have a super high metabolism, if you're trying to lose weight, it's not a good idea. Lots of vegetables, lots of protein, a little bit of carbohydrate, and preferably at the end of the meal. And then your dessert, like I said, if you must have dessert, think about having like a fruit crumble or a chia pudding, something that has a lot of fiber and some fat in it. High intensity exercise. If you're going to do high intensity exercise, not a good idea to do it at the end of the day. It's a better idea to do it in the morning. You're going to take advantage of that cortisol that you have high in the morning, and you're going to have more energy to do the high intensity exercise. If you're going to exercise in the evening, you want to do something that doesn't raise your cortisol. So that would be gentle yoga, yin or restorative yoga. Body weight exercises, as long as it's like gentle yoga, as long as they're gentle. If you're doing PT exercises that are not very gravity based, they're probably fine to do in the evening. But it's not really a good idea to go to like an evening spin class. Again, these are general things to propose to you. If you are going to an evening spin class and it works for you and you're losing weight and you feel happy and healthy, don't worry about it. But if you're getting kind of stuck, it's really better to do your intense exercise in the morning. I know I'm at a point where I do not feel like doing intense exercise. The later the day gets, the less interested I am in doing intense exercise. I'm always interested in a good yin or restorative practice because that makes me feel really good. So So that's how to work that out. If you're, and I would say that weightlifting is you do want to do that in the mornings. If you want to get your heavy weights going or a lot of body weight exercise, I do that early in the day as well. Remember that vitamin C is the highest in the adrenal glands. Make sure that you get extra vitamin C. If somebody's exhausted, you may want to supplement with vitamin C. I take vitamin C supplements. I get in 2,000 milligrams a day with bioflavonoids. And I take a mixed ascorbate one, and sometimes I take a chewable, sometimes I double up on the mixed ascorbate one, and they both have bioflavonoids in it, which also enhance the effects of the vitamin C, and they're wonderfully anti-inflammatory. And things that also help with blood sugar regulation and your circadian cycle are going to be your omega-3s. I'm a big fan of the fish oil. I tend to recommend that a lot. Bifidobacteria. So if you get a probiotic, consider getting one with bifidobacteria. And I switch up my probiotics. I do different probiotics. I cycle through different ones because I have access to a lot of cool ones. I do have a nice bifidobacteria mix that I like to take. I'm taking that right now. So bifidobacteria is good for your energy. Also berberine, if you really struggle with blood sugar regulation and you're not. So berberine I will give to people if they are struggling with their insulin and their blood sugar regulation, and even if their hemoglobin A1C, which is a measure of the level of damage to cells as a result of blood sugar, and even if people are just having issues with weight loss, I'll give them berberine because it helps to regulate all these things. And if somebody is diabetic and they have poor control, I might give them berberine with lots and lots of caveats. You need to measure your blood sugar. Make sure you're not having a blood sugar crash, because berberine can lower your blood sugar. It lowers your A1C. It's very helpful for that. So if you're already on blood sugar regulating medications, whether it's insulin or GLP-1 or any of the other blood sugar regulators, or metformin, whatever it is, I want to see what their blood sugar and their A1C are doing before I give them the berberine, and then give them lots of cautions. If you see unwanted spikes and drops in your blood sugar while you're taking the berberine, you have to stop the berberine if you're going to continue to take the drugs. Also, sodium butyrate, butyric acid you get from butter. You can also take supplements that have butyric acid in them, and they can help to regulate your circadian cycle and blood sugar. So then I met this lovely woman. Everybody was lovely, but I met Tanvi Gandhi. I really enjoyed meeting her. I didn't catch where she practices, but she's a lovely woman, and she practices Ayurveda. And one of the things that she did was she talked about yoga nidra. And I tell people and you all the time, do yoga nidra. Yoga nidra is great. Find if you know, if you don't have a place to go to, sometimes they have yoga nidra practices at your local yoga studio. So check on that. They definitely have it sometimes. I don't think they have it all the time, but they have workshops in it at Yono. You can always go to YouTube. There's lots of people who do yoga nidra practices on YouTube. And I tell people about Ali Boothroyd. Ali Boothroyd has tons of uploaded yoga nidra practices for any amount of time that you want to do. You can do it for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, half an hour, all the way on up to like an hour and a half, and everything in between. And it's great. So yoga nidra is great for increasing alpha and theta waves and will help you sleep. So if you do, that's something I would do later in the day. So the first day that I was at the conference, I'd worked a half day, and the half day, I was out the door at probably 2 or 3 o'clock, which wasn't too bad. And then I had decided to spend the first night to go halfway to Old Saybrook for the conference. And so I spent the night with my friend Rob in Salem, and he has a beautiful home, and he put me in one of the bedrooms upstairs, and it was gorgeous. It was like staying in a bed and breakfast. It was just a beautiful old New England home, and, you know, it's a very cozy bed. He even gave me a little cat stuffy with a bell on it. It was so cute, and I was extremely comfortable in the bed. And the room is very, very cozy and warm and nice. And I had my own bathroom. The bathroom was beautiful. It was pink. And, you know, the bathroom was right there. So if I had to go to the bathroom, it was right there. And it was great. And I have to drink some water. Anyway, I went to sleep. And I had trouble falling asleep. And I had to... I went lights out at around 10 o'clock like you're supposed to. But I guess I was really revved up. I might have had too much caffeine that day. I had worked and seen patients that day, which usually revs me up. And then I spent time with Rob. And, you know, we had had supper. And then we spent time doing Duolingo together and watching some TV. And I was revved up. And at 10 o'clock, usually I should be able to fall asleep. But I couldn't. I had to wake up at 11 and read and look at my phone like that. And I kept waking up every hour. And I just didn't get a good night's sleep. I don't know if it was because in part I was, you know, I had been revved up during the day and I was anxious about getting to the conference. So I had a poor night's sleep and I felt lousy when I first got to the conference. I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to do this. I may have to forget about the conference and, you know, and do it all virtually. And you can do it virtually after the fact because they upload the talks and then you can take quizzes for it. So midday, I wasn't staying at the hotel I was staying at was not the same one where the conference was. It was 5 miles further west in Westbrook. And so I went and checked into the hotel at lunchtime instead of having their lunch, which was fine. And the hotel I stayed at was beautiful. It was the Water's Edge in Westbrook. And I had this, again, a gorgeous, cozy room with a great big bed. And it was really comfortable, really clean and gorgeous and nice place. And so I hung out there for a little bit, missed lunch. So I snacked on, I had some protein sticks. And so I had those. And then they had snacks later on in the afternoon and I had those. So I was okay. And then I had dinner, you know, they gave us dinner and I had the dinner that they provided, which was lots of protein and vegetables. It was great. And a little bit of carbohydrate. You could control how much carbohydrate you were eating, which was great. And then that night, my friend Robin Ritterman, she's my friend who practices in Hamden. And so she was staying there and I hung out with her a lot during the conference and she was staying at the same hotel on the same floor. So she came over to my room and we chatted for a long time, maybe an hour or more. And that was delightful. And she left me at like 20 after 9 because we said we should really get to bed in that sweet spot, which was very funny. And then I read for a little bit and then I was lights out by 10 o'clock and I slept a lot better that night, probably because I was already at the conference. I didn't have as much caffeine. We had had one talk that was actually, it included some Qigong from Mark Romano and that was great. And so the next day I woke up and I felt a lot better. I had a little bit of caffeine, a little bit of iced tea, not nearly as much. And then over the course of the day, there was an hour and a half sound bath, which I participated in. So that involved lying down in Shavasana and listening to these soothing singing bowls and rain sticks and other things and bird sounds. And so Lindy Chmielewski provided bird sounds. So that was wonderful. And so I laid there for like an hour and a half doing this guided meditation. Felt so great afterwards. And then later in the day, Tanvi Gandhi, once again, she did a singing bowl practice as well for another hour. So I spent almost 2.5 hours in Shavasana in meditation. So I felt really good at the end of the day. I felt really energized and great because I had had this wonderful exercise of breathing. So Tanvi Gandhi, when she spoke, she had a lecture the first day and she talked about Ayurveda and talked about interesting things like, you know, one of the things that in Ayurvedic medicine they do is if you need an essential oil, they'll put it in your navel and you'll absorb the essential oil through your navel. I keep forgetting about that. What I want to do is take frankincense essential oil and put it on my navel and see if it helps with inflammation. It's just such a simple thing to do. Just a one drop of an essential oil, place it on and off you go. So what she said that yoga nidra is great for increasing alpha and theta waves and will help you sleep. So I spent a lot of time. So alpha and theta waves, you can do it from yoga nidra. You can do it from yin and restorative yoga. You can do it from meditation. Anything where you're doing, you're still and you're doing a deep breathing exercise. I would say, you know, you're going to get definitely alpha waves from yoga, but the stiller you are and the more focused on breathing you are, the more likely you are to stimulate your alpha and theta waves. So I had a lot of that going on. And I recommend it to you if you can do guided meditation regularly, yin, restorative yoga, anything still that you incorporate deep breathing is going to help you access those alpha and theta waves. You're going to be calmer. You're going to have less cortisol revving you up all the time, and you'll sleep better. So doing a practice like that close to bedtime is going to help you sleep. So especially if you have trouble. All right, so back to Florence McPherson. She gave a delightful talk, and she herself is delightful. And she practices down in Milford. And she talked all about the cell salts and said that they are nanotechnology, and that Schussler, who characterized the cell salts, found that 6X was the most useful potency. She gave some advice. She said that ferrum fos and homeopathic ferrum metallicum, you can give them for an iron deficiency, and you may not even need to take iron pills. You can take natrum muriaticum and natrum sulfuricum cell salts for edema. They might help with that. MagFos, Magnesia Foscorica, is great for menstrual and any kind of cramping. Anything you would need regular magnesium for, you can use MagFos. CaliFos of varying potencies, it was studied and found that they all had nanoparticles, and the lower potencies were better at modulating mitochondria, and CaliFos is great for nervous exhaustion. So if you are exhausted, if you have a neurological condition, if you have a tick-borne illness, if you're just exhausted and you have brain fog, CaliFos is a great one to take, and you can take it multiple times a day, and it can be helpful. And we talked about bioplasma already. It has all the cell salts in it. Great for when you have a lot of things going on. You have a multi-system issues like I do. And you can just take a little bit every day. And you can kind of use them as needed. All right. And then we had a talk on MCAS. MCAS, which is mast cell activation syndrome. So I'll get started on this. I'm not sure how much further I'm going to get to go. But we had a talk on MCAS and antihistamines. If you think you have MCAS, you can take an antihistamine like cetirizine or famotidine, which you can get at the drugstore over the counter. And if you feel better when you take those, you probably have mast cell activation. So things that can help with mast cell activation. So, you know, there are tests you can do to see if someone has MCAS. It is rare that I see anybody with these tests positive, but you test serum tryptase, and then there's two urinary metabolites that you measure. One of them is N-methylhistamine, and the other one is 2,3, it's a long name, 2,3 diner blah 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 progesterone of some kind, and you measure those. And I have never seen those positive, and yet people still have symptoms, like people have repeat hives, then this is something that we look at. And so when you think somebody has it, there's different things that you can do. People use low-dose ivermectin. People use low-dose naltrexone, which is that antagonist for opioids, but it works on the glial cells. So it works to help with inflammation and pain. Flavonoids, bioflavonoids, like I talked about, citrus flavonoids, they are great mast cell stabilizers, as is quercetin. And you can even get them together, not necessarily, so you can get them separately. Luteolin is a good one too. And again, if you're not getting the results from the lab test, a quick and dirty way to find out is to tell the patient, go to the drugstore, get some cetirizine or famotidine or levocetirizine, any of those. I'm not saying brand names, but you know, you can find those easily at the drugstore. If you hear what I'm saying, you can say, "Hey, pharmacist, what the ND said, look at the cetirizine. What brand should I get?" And they'll tell you. All right, but it'll be in the antihistamine section. And so other things you can use, you can give vitamin C. We talked about taking vitamin C, and if somebody's in an acute state, 2 or 3 grams a day. You can measure their vitamin C levels if you want to. I haven't ever seen anybody's vitamin C level be off. Vitamin D, I like to see people's vitamin Ds at least in the 50s. And so I always measure people's vitamin Ds. And if they have anything going on, I have them take vitamin D. You can use nebulized saline, and that helps. And there are antiprostaglandins that you can take, like then there's cromolyn. Cromolyn and other drugs like that. And there's Cromolyn and umacitinib. No, it's not umacitinib. Umaclidinium. That I believe is a prostaglandin stabilizer. And then there's omalizumab. It has a brand name. I don't know if it's off patent, so I think it has a brand name. And that is a monoclonal antibody. It's a biologic, and people use that if they have really bad hives. Start by changing their diet. People who have mast cell activation usually can't eat fermented things. They usually can't eat leftovers. That will set them off. The other thing that you can use is methylene blue. And so methylene blue, you want to be careful of. It's better to get it prescribed or get a really good brand, and you use it in drop dosages. You don't take a lot of it. Methylene blue is a great oxygenator, antioxidant. It's good for a lot of things. I am nervous to try it. I mean, I might at some point, but I'm really concerned about trying it. So there's a lot more stuff. There's a few more things that I can talk about that I learned at the conference, but I think I'm going to wrap up. So I'm thinking one of the things that you want to do is make sure that you are a participant in your care, that you advocate for yourself, and that when you do things for yourself, make sure that they make sense to you. You don't have to go off and run and do the first thing that you hear about. That when you find out that you have to do something, you can always take time, sit back, and think about whether this is something you want to do. Anyway, there's a lot to be said for working on the stress piece. Whatever you have going on, doing activities to lower cortisol is going to be helpful to you. That's your meditation, that's your deep breathing, yin restorative yoga, leisure walks in nature, and the weather's going to start to improve. It's not so much today, but in the near future, we're going to have better weather. So once that happens, you're going to be able to get outside more, and that's going to be really good for you. All right, so I am going to wrap up for now, and I will tell you about some local herbs that Lindsay Chmielewski told me about. And meanwhile, and I have lots more to talk to you about. So you have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am France Dorchendi, naturopathic physician. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, Buzzsprout, and YouTube. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at France Dorch ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores and WHUS.org. Thank you for listening.